we got Steve Sable on the line. We're going to get right to the STC hotline. Steve, how you doing today?
I can't hear you very well.
Steve, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, thanks.
Oh, man. This is Barbershop J. How you doing, Mr. Sable?
I'm doing okay.
That's good.
Hey, Mr. Sable, Rick Morris from the FDH Lounge. We've all come together here with Walton Barbershop J on their program here today to talk to you. It's a pleasure to get a chance to hear about what's going on with NFL Films. Are there any latest developments going on that you'd like to plug right now? I know you're starting to get a presence on Hulu
well, sure.
and YouTube.
Well, in about a month, we're going to be starting our show Hard Knocks. That's going to be on HBO, where we're going to spend the whole summer with the New York Jets. So that's going to be great. We're also doing two specials for the NFL Network. One is a 90-minute documentary on Bill Parcells and his career and his contributions to the game. And then also starting in September, we're doing a 10-part series on the 100 greatest players in NFL history. We have a blue ribbon panel of over 90 Hall of Fame writers, former coaches, scouts, players who have all voted on the top 100 players, and we've converted that into a 10-week television series. So we're pretty busy.
Mr. Say, well, this is Barbershop J again.
All right.
I ask you, and no offense, but I got to ask, some of the teams' profiles so far on the Hard Knocks series have had difficulty in this, you know, that season or whatnot, almost like some of the players that are profiled on the cover of Madden.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, tell me a little bit about that. Do you think it's
no? That's a bunch of BS. That doesn't. And if you could go back to when we started, we did the Chiefs. Well, when they came, we spent the whole summer with them. They were in first place for the first month of the season.
Okay.
After that, they had some injuries and didn't do as well.
Okay.
The Cowboys, we did the following year. They started out strong, but again, as the season progressed, certain things happened and they didn't do as well. I don't think you could blame that on Hard Knocks. And then last year, when we did the Bengals, everyone said, oh, what are you doing there? They're last place, and they're all the problems they've had. But we thought they would be a good story, and then the Bengals end up going to the playoffs. So I think, really, if you talk to the teams that we've done, this is our 10th year doing Hard Knocks, that because we're there in training camp, it raises the tempo. The guys know that every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock, if they've been caught sleeping in a meeting, it's going to show up on HBO. And it raises the tempo, the competition, the energy, and that's one of the reasons why Rex Ryan and Woody Johnson wanted us to do Hard Knocks with the Jets, is because it does. They felt their team is going to be a contender, and they're going to have to be used to the scrutiny of the media, and that's part of training camp. So I don't really buy that, and it's as you pointed out, and it's like the being on the cover of the Madden game or Sports Illustrated. But when you really look at it, the time that we spent with the team in Hard Knocks, they usually come right out of the blocks pretty well, and it's hard to blame Hard Knocks on something that happens in November or December.
Well,
I hope I answered that.
No, you did. And again, it was no offense. I just really had to know. But I tell you what, this is Barbershop.
No, I didn't take it that way. It was a very good question, and we've been asked that a couple times. So you came right into my wheelhouse with that question.
Okay. Again, this is Barbershop Jay, and I gotta say, if that's the case, would you please do a Hard Knock on the Browns, please, so that they can.
Well, maybe we will. I don't know. The Browns, of course, have such a great tradition. And, when we started NFL Films in 1962, I remember giving a presentation at the time to the owners and coaches. And I was, 20 years old, and I walk into a room, and there's Vince Lombardi, Paul Brown, George Halas, Buddy Parker. I started to talk, and nothing came out. I was so intimidated. But Cleveland, with Paul Brown, and has always been such a great – to me, that's one of the greatest dynasties in NFL history. When you look at the Cleveland Browns and you start with the old All-America Conference in 1946 and then coming up to joining the NFL, and I've always said that, people talk about the greatest quarterback of all time, and my vote has always gone to Otto Graham. He took his team to a championship game every year he played. And his yards per pass attempt is was something like 8.3, which is phenomenal even in this age. So, you know, all of us here at NFL Films will be waiting for the Browns to make a comeback. And I think with Mike there, you're going to be off to a good start.
Well, you just put yourself over with us very strongly with the kind words about the Browns here. We join you in that regard. I've got a question also that might be a little bit outside the box. When you look at the compilations that you guys have done over the years and the creativity on those, going back to the beginning of the Football Follies and everything that you've done really ever since, I'm wondering, when you go back in the archives here, you've had a lot of guys who've been pro football players, particularly back in the day, some of them more recently, who've also gone on to do some things in the pro wrestling rings. And when you look at how much those DVDs have sold, boy, you've got, you know, Bronco Nagurski, Alex Karras. You've got some guys from back in the day, and you probably wouldn't have to negotiate with Vince McMahon for footage rights on anything that they did. I'm just wondering if that's ever crossed your mind, trying to tap into that cross-section of people who also watch pro football.
Yeah, we did a piece with Leo Nomalini, who played with the and Wahoo McDaniel and Buck Buchanan. And I'm trying to think, there was a linebacker, Ron Pritchard, for the Oilers, who went into pro wrestling. But we've never done a documentary about pro wrestling. That's almost a whole separate genre. But we have done pieces. Actually, I think Laurinaitis, isn't his father a professional wrestler?
Yes, sir. He was Road Warrior Animal, one of the most prominent guys of the 1980s. That's a great
place
actually, right there.
All right. Well, we're doing a piece on him for our show on ESPN. It's called NFL Films Presents. We're on ESPN once the season starts in the afternoons. And I'm just looking at our show schedule, and I see we're doing a piece on Laurinaitis, father and son, and the father is a wrestler. So, to answer your question, yes.
Okay.
Now, over the years, I know you've been to every Super Bowl, and a lot of them have been exciting the last few years, like the New York Giants against the Patriots, the Arizona Cardinals against the Pittsburgh Steelers. What do you think was the best Super Bowl that you ever watched?
Whoa, boy! That you know, when you say the best, I think the Giants and the Patriots was an incredible game because of what was at stake. The Patriots are going for an undefeated season. The Giants, to me, that was a game that was not only in my mind the biggest upset, but had the most memorable play in the Manning to Tyree, you know, completion. But when you talk to me about Super Bowls, and to me, the one I remember is the first one. And that wasn't really a good game, but the expectation and the fact that no one really knew what to expect. No one knew what was going to happen, and there was so much at stake for Lombardi's Packers because he told the team, if we get beat, the whole legacy of the Green Bay Packers that we've built up for the last 6 or 7 years is going to go right down the toilet. So there was an incredible amount of pressure, and no one knew what to expect. I mean, Hank Stram was a very innovative coach. He had the moving pocket, the stack, the triple stack defense. And to me, as someone working with the NFL, that was my fifth year at the league, there was a lot at stake for us, too. That it was important that the NFL win and win decisively. So to me, I still remember the feeling I had at halftime when it was 14-10. It was still close, and it wasn't until Willie Wood picked off Len Dawson's pass in the third quarter and then the Packers started to pull away that Super Bowl meant the most to me. Even though I don't think it was one of the best games, but to me personally, there was so much at stake, and there's so many things that I remember Lombardi being so tense about before that game. Those were the days when a head coach would wear a necktie, and he knotted his necktie so tight he had a Windsor knot. It was the size of a marble. That at the end of the game, I was doing an interview with him, and he was trying to take off his tie to go in and, you know, change, take a shower. He couldn't undo his tie. The knot was so tight because he was so tense before the game. And the equipment manager, Dad Brazier was his name, came over with a pair of tape shears and had to cut his necktie off his neck. And the punchline to that story was, a month later, we were showing the highlight film to Coach Lombardi in his basement, And when that scene came up, his wife, Marie, raised hell with him because apparently that tie had been an expensive $45 Hermès tie that she'd got him for Christmas in New York. And when she saw that, you know, I guess he never told her, you know, what had happened. When she saw that scene, all hell broke loose in the Lombardi basement. No one ever talked to us about the film. It was just how upset Coach Lombardi's wife was that, you know, he destroyed that necktie, which she'd given him as a Christmas present.
Barbershop J here again. When you speak about Mr. Lombardi, and again, I love all of the NFL film stuff. I'm watching anytime I can, because I just love the camera work and everything. It's just so innovative, and again, it's a pleasure to watch. But when you say Mr.
Thank
Lombardi,
you.
I think about the one scene where he says, "What we're trying to do is create a seal here and a seal here." And run.
Oh, yeah.
Right
up there. Mm-hmm. And get a seal here and a seal here, and you run the ball in the alley.
Yeah,
and then the
yeah.
other bites were everybody grabbing out there. Nobody tackling. Grab, grab, grab. Put your damn shoulder in there. But actually, I should mention that we're in the process now of doing a documentary on Coach Lombardi that's going to be on HBO in December. And we've been working on this for the last 4 or 5 months. And I think it's certainly, as far as I'm concerned, it's the last time around for me doing anything on Coach Lombardi. And we think it's going to be the definitive final documentary on his life and career. And that'll be on HBO in December.
I've got to look forward to that. Now, I want to ask you, the old AAFC records, should they be included in the Hall of Fame or, you know, in
I think
in
they are.
I'm sorry?
They are, because it's not the National Football League Hall of Fame.
Okay.
It's the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So the old All-America Conference record, I mean, Spec Sanders, I think, record has averaged something like 6.3 yards per carry for the New York Yanks when they played in the old old All-America Conference. And the 49ers were in it. The Colts were in it. I forget who else was in it, but I believe that the Browns went through a whole season undefeated, didn't they?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think it was 47 or 48 that I know Dante Lavelli and Len Ford telling me once that they thought that team was the best, was better than the teams that won NFL championships in the 50s.
Wow.
Well, that's quite a statement right there. Certainly, I've got a two-part question for you because I know we're kind of winding down on your availability of time here. I wanted to ask you as far as the potential for repurposing some of the old game films that you have there. I mean, you have a library that is just unmatched, and I know that when our senior producer Steve Cervillo was out there, you know, I said to him that when you guys were gracious enough to give him the tour, I said, "Man, that's like going to the Playboy Mansion for any red-blooded American, you know, getting to go there and see that." I'm wondering if there's a potential for repurposing that potentially as part of your expanded online strategy. And then also I wanted to give you a chance to talk about your art career that you've got going on. And I understand there's an exhibit that's going to be coming up.
Well, the first thing is that there's 100 million feet of film in our library. It's the largest sports film library in the world. And the only other human endeavor that has been recorded more extensively on 16-millimeter film than the National Football League is World War II. And eventually we're going to pass them. But the first question I was really, and that's the one I think is I probably should spend the time on answering, is that I think eventually with the Internet is that our entire library will be available to fans on the Internet. So if you're a Earl Campbell fan, and you want to see, I want to see all Earl Campbell's touchdowns, you'll be able to access our library and just punch up Earl Campbell touchdowns, and every one of his touchdown runs will come up. Or if you're a Browns fan and you want to see something with Bernie Kosar or Brian Sipe, all of that, every Brian Sipe touchdown pass will be accessible through the Internet. So that's going to be, it's still 3-4, maybe 5 years away, and it's going to come through the NFL.com, but we're at the process now of logging and categorizing that.
Groundbreaking.
So we get to see all of, Derek Anderson highlights.
That's right.
Online.
You'll be able to see anything that you want. And I think to older fans, it'll be great to be able to go back and see the Dub Jones scoring six touchdowns against the Bears in one game. Get to see Lou Saban. People remember him as a coach. He was a great linebacker for the old Browns. And a lot of the things that, to me, Paul Brown, when you think of the history of the National Football League, well, George Halas is the George Washington. But Paul Brown was the Thomas Jefferson. He gave the game of football he brought it into the modern era with the passing pocket, with training camps. He invented the face mask. He invented the draw play. He really brought pro football into the entire game, not just pro football, into the modern era. And I know whenever I talk to Bill Belichick, the one coach that he feels is the one that's influenced the game more than anyone, more than a Sid Gilman, more than a Bill Walsh, more than Lombardi or Shula, is Paul Brown.
Mm. Well, I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to everything that you guys are doing over there at NFL Films. I'll say I love the stuff that you're already doing, but I got to ask you. This is Barbershop Jay again. I got to ask you. You being Mr. NFL, so to speak, how do you feel about the Super Bowl? We were asking just about everybody we get on here about the Super Bowl in 2014.
Well, I'm conflicted. When the National Football League started, for 35 years, the championship game was decided in an outdoor stadium in the winter. It was played in Chicago. It was played in Cleveland. It was played in Detroit. It was played in New York.
Wow.
And then there was a couple of games where the weather was really bad, and the media, led by Red Smith in New York, started to complain and say the weather is warping the competitive nature of the game. It especially was true in the 62 championship when the Giants and the Packers played, and the wind was so bad in Yankee Stadium that it took away Y.A. Tittle's passing game. For us as filmmakers, some of the most dramatic, greatest games have been played in terrible weather, and the Ice Bowl, number one. To me, probably the greatest game in NFL history was played 16 degrees below zero in Green Bay. And let's face it, New York is not the Aleutian Islands. We're not talking about sub-freezing weather. The thing that would concern me about New York is wind, and that can do more to a game, affect the outcome of the game, than cold. As filmmakers, I think it'll be sort of neat to have a game in New York. It'll look different. It'll feel different. I would rather see the game played at 1:00. I don't like the night games. And again, I'm prejudiced because when you have a game played in the daytime, the light's better, the film looks better. We can shoot higher speed, slow motion. But listen, when you think of football, football's played outside. That's the way it started. The greatest single line in the history of newspaper journalism was about a football game played outside. And that was when Grantland Rice wrote the lead for the 1925 Army-Notre Dame game, and he said, "Outlined against the blue-gray October sky, the four horsemen rode again." You can't write something like that if it's played in the damn dome. So I think it's neat. I think it'll be interesting. In New York, it'll be a great venue for it. It'll be, and as one owner said, this game will put New York on the map.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. We'd love to have you again. We had a great time.
All right, it was fun. As always, it's fun talking about something I love to talk about, and that's football.
Thank you so much.